Well, can I have faith? And we're talking about faith tonight. And if we're talking about faith, here's a man with whom to start the new year. Look how Jesus commends him. Can you see in chapter 7, verse 9? When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him, at this centurion. And turning to the crowd following him, he said, I tell you, I've not found such great faith even in Israel. Very impressive. But you know, you do wonder what his soldiers would have said about that commendation. Wonder what the soldiers in the garrison would have said. Especially if he was commanding them today, say he was in the Regent's Park barracks or the Hyde Park barracks. Because this is how many secular humanists in the culture regard faith. Here's Professor Richard Dawkins of Oxford University. Here he is. Faith is blind trust in the absence of, even in the teeth of, evidence. So today, to many, faith is believing something even when there's not much evidence to believe it. Now, what does that make great faith, like this centurion's? Well, what does it do to that? Well, it means it's really hard to believe something, but actually, you believe it anyway. That's great faith, isn't it? No evidence, but you believe it anyway. Which puts this centurion into the sort of Alice in Wonderland territory. Why, sometimes I've believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast. I'm sure Richard Dawkins would lump the centurion into that. Well, if that's the case, do you want to be under his command, an Alice in Wonderland centurion? Do you want to potentially have him order you to go to your death? Because what do you call someone who believes in something for which there is no evidence? Answer, insane. That's what you believe them. You know, some of my school and university friends think that of me. Now, I tell you, I am insane. My wife tells me that, but not for this reason. So can you imagine, just imagine the regiment having a laugh about this, about the centurion's faith today if we were down in Regent's Park barracks. A soldier says, oh, sir, I'd love to have your faith. And everyone titters away in the background. And what he really means is, oh, sir, I wish I was insane like you. And at the very least, people see faith as a quality that some get, sometimes you get, and sometimes you don't, at the very least in the culture. So many would say about faith, they'd say this, well, you know, I've tried it, but it's not my thing. In other words, actually, I don't believe things without evidence. And of course, you're in a region that doesn't have evidence. And at this point, as we begin 2019, ladies and gentlemen, unless we get this next point, we're not going to understand. We're going to be miles away. At this point, what we've got to see is what the Bible understands by faith and what the culture understands by faith are very different things. It's very countercultural what the Bible says about faith. You see, the Bible says, here's the point, that everybody has got a faith. The only question is this, what's your faith in? The biblical view of everyone you know is that they do have faith. The Bible insists faith is an everybody thing. You see, the biblical view of faith is not confined to the religious zone, to the spiritual zone. No, no, no. The Bible defines faith as a human being's foundational belief about the way the world is. That's where the Bible begins on faith. It's the foundational worldview that you've got. So this is actually, here's the issue, point why we all have faith. We've all got it according to the Bible. Now, do come back to Hope Explore tomorrow night and chat about that. We've all got it. Now, as I say that, think of the man in the film that we've just had. If you knocked on his door and you said, do you have a faith? Are you religious? What would he say? No. Oh, no, I don't have a faith. No, I don't do that. And he'd then probably say, get off my lawn. Get off the lawn. But the Bible would emphatically say that he was worshipping, that he functionally had faith, which is why at one point, if you remember the film, we put on the back of the mower, praise the lawn, because here's someone who's worshipping. And if you don't get that, you're totally naive about what the Christian faith's about. So think of him in the clip. Think of him. Here he goes, you see. By the way, they're actually married in real life, the guy and his wife, so I don't know what it did to their marriage, but anyway, there you go. But to understand what his faith is in, what he worships, well, we ask these foundational questions, and you'll see in these foundational questions, we don't put God in, but they're nevertheless all about faith. Here are the questions that we ask as people come along. What keeps you going in difficult situations? It's a faith question. What are your if-onlys? What do you hope will bring you fulfillment in life? What if you lost it would make you feel life wasn't worth living? Now, we can apply our lawn man to all of those things. If only I can get the best lawn and defeat the guy next door, that'll bring me fulfillment in life. That'll make life feel like it's worth living just to get that lawn absolutely right. I mean, it's a comedy, but it's got a sting in the tail. I developed this because 10 years ago I was with a rugby mate and I was pushing upon him Christian faith. We'd known each other at Bristol University. And he leaned back and he said to me, "Rico, you've got to understand I'm not a religious man." And I thought, "Oh, you are. I'm just not asking you the right questions." So please note, there's no mention of God, but it's all about faith. And the Life Explored course reflects that. These are all about assumptions and beliefs that govern our behaviour. They're all about worship. Now, someone who had a revelation about this was the secular humanist, the atheist, David Foster Wallace. And he wrote these words, and they created quite a stir in his community. "In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there's no such thing as atheism. There's no such thing as not worshipping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship." He suddenly saw that, caused a really big stir. And he committed suicide soon afterwards. And the Life Explored material gets people to admit, okay, I do worship. Okay, I do have a faith. Right at the heart of it is we put so much resource into helping people trying to see that with things like lawn. But the next question is this, of course. Here's the next question. We all have faith, but why do we all need a faith that works? Do I have a faith that works? Let's have a look at verse 2 to see that. Because can you see the crisis moment for the centurion that brings the moment of authentic faith? It's in verse 2. Here is the shock that wakes him up to what he's really believing. There, a centurion servant, whom his master valued highly, was ill and about to die. Very often we're only alerted to the issue of faith, to what we worship, to what we trust in. Ladies and gentlemen, when the storms hit, it's when the storms hit, when the D's hit. So we tick along fine, going our merry way, until the D's come along. Do you know the D's? Disease, death, disorder in the world, debt, depression, divorce. Now, that's often what causes people to consider real faith. I mean, I wish they just did it because it was true. We want to offer that, obviously. But actually, these things often shake the cage. I sometimes call the Life Explored course the Pain Explored course, because that's what draws people in. C.S. Lewis said, "Pain is God's loud hailer." I mean, I was typical of this. I was 16 years old. I wasn't from a Christian home. There was never prayer in my home. There was never Bible reading. I love my parents very much, but those things weren't there. When I'm 16 years old, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to make a name for myself, as all 16-year-olds sort of have to do. I'm trying to have a laugh. I'd like to please my parents. And suddenly, my godfather gets killed in a cliff fall. And I realise, as it's the first time my father weeps, that no one in my family has an answer to death. Pain explored. My beloved parents had no answer. It was just shrug your shoulders and go on living. And the centurion hits this crisis. And just to say, this wasn't just a master-slave relationship here. His servant was a person he relied on every day. If you've seen the film Gladiator, this film here, it was a bit like the master Maximus's relationship with his servant there. By the way, guys, this is a great film for a date night. The girls love it. It's a real rom-com. I'd really advise it. Just lovely. Nothing bad happens. A sweet film. And the servant is a totally loyal, close confidant who's anticipating his master's every need. That's the relationship. So this master is, this centurion is suddenly facing up to mortality, to the fear of, how am I going to cope when they're not here? What am I going to do? And that's when faith becomes a living reality for him. Death is coming. What will work now? What's my faith in now? Because I can't seem to take death on just with a sword. So the centurion asks himself, do I have a philosophy of life which copes with death? And of course, at this point in time, there's another D, ladies and gentlemen, that is a great danger. And we see it all over London. Here's the next D, and we try to reveal it and show it imagery in the film. What's the next D? Denial. Denial. It's not just a river in Egypt, everybody. Sorry, terrible joke. But he's lost everything, his home, his wife, his car, his lawn, and yet, how does he end? Well, he's back again. He's going for it again, another little lawn the size of a brick. Utter denial. It's got a sting in the tail. He still is looking there for meaning and identity. But the key is, do we have a faith that can work when we need it to work? So, where are we so far? Well, we're now going to come to our third point, a wrong foundation for faith. One, we all have a faith. Two, do I have a faith that works? But thirdly, in verses 3 to 5, we're going to see a wrong foundation for faith. Can we look down and see that together? 3 to 5. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him, "This man deserves to have you do this, because he loves our nation, has built our synagogue." So Jesus went with them. A wrong foundation for faith. You see, there are two we've got here. We've got a right one and a wrong one. And surprisingly, the wrong foundation comes from the people you'd expect to get it right. From the religious people, from the Jewish elders. Let me explain. The centurion has many under his command, at least 100. He's a man of authority. He's a man of power. He's part of the occupying power, which has conquered the Jews. But look at verse 5 to see how exceptional he is. Do we see verse 5? The elders in Capernaum came to Jesus and say, what do they say? He loves our nation. He's built our synagogue. He's also a socially sensitive man. He knows that in that culture, it would not be appropriate for a Gentile, a non-Jew, to approach a rabbi, someone like Jesus, who's a teacher. So he doesn't go himself. Despite all his power, he sends the Jewish elders, and the Jews are happy to go for him. Now, as they go for him, they're going to make an appeal on the centurion's behalf to come and heal his servant. But look at the basis of their appeal. Now, ladies and gentlemen, again, start of 2019, this is crucial for Christian understanding. So wake up, let's hear this. Crucial we get this. Do you see what is the basis of their appeal, the reason Jesus should help them? Have a look there. This man deserves to have you do this. Why? He loves our nation. He built our synagogue. In other words, he's really a good guy. Look at all the things he's done. I mean, he even helped build our synagogue. Can you imagine that? A Roman helping to build that synagogue. And Jesus, you've preached in that synagogue. So this guy, he's helped you too. He's moral, he's responsible, he's kind, he's socially aware. So obviously he deserves to have you do this. And that's how it works, right? And here we come to the foundation of faith in pretty much every human heart in the world, ladies and gentlemen. It's a default position, and it's all about merit. Gosh, the West End of London's about this. Merit. The religious word for this is works. But because of what I do, I deserve this. Work hard, and I get my just desserts. So I get out of life what I put in. If I work hard enough, it'll come off. Longfellow, the heights by great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but they, while their contemporaries slept, labored upward in the night. That's it. So you get on, you get accepted, you succeed. Well, okay, what's wrong with that? Well, on one level, nothing. Now, we know that's how it works. All of us will be having assessments in work or whatever. But if you make it your basis for faith, if you make it the orientation of your heart there, it's how you operate. Well, when it comes to God, everything's going to go wrong. And in order to explain this, I've brought up a great faith expert. Here he is, Jose Mourinho. God, he must think I'm a really great guy. He must think that because otherwise he would not have given me so much. He must have a high opinion about me. It's sad I wasn't preaching this sermon 10 weeks ago because it would have gone better in terms of what's happened to Mourinho. Nevertheless, we laugh about it because it's so brazen, but actually he just says what deep down we're all afraid to say. We mask it better. We can see the pride in it, but our narratives internally are this. It's the bank account narrative. I've made all these deposits, God. I deserve some withdrawals. Jesus, you better do this because you owe him, we owe him, the nation owes him. Now please do it. Act, Jesus, for this centurion. And this is the foundation of every major world religion outside of biblical Christianity, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to understand it, you go here. I've researched this. Islam, how do you get to heaven? By keeping the five pillars of Islam. You keep those, you do well with enough integrity, and eventually, hopefully, you'll attain heaven. Hopefully. Or what about the karmic scale, Hinduism? How do you climb up the karmic scale? Well, you do good deeds in this life and in past lives. And as you do that, you move on into ever-increasing enlightenment until you obtain Brahman. Or what about following the manifold path of enlightenment within Buddhism? Well, you do that, you get enlightenment, but it's all about what you do, what you put in, the effort you put in. So what it is this. It's a spiritual ladder. And you climb and you climb and you climb, and as you do that, you deserve the blessing. Now, it might be the default of every major religion, but ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't work. Now, why doesn't it work? You see, you may have a great CV, you may spruce yourself up, you may come this evening and present very well, but can I tell you this, you and I, and if you're anything like me, you're going to be the same, are not going to advertise what's really going on in our heart and what was going on in our heart over Christmas. You see, my failings are absolutely seen by God. He sees the heart. He sees what's going on inside. And climbing up some ladder ain't going to offset that. The Bible says everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom we must give an account. And that's our problem. And it's overwhelming. And it keeps spewing out of our toxic hearts. And if you don't believe that, good luck to the people you're doing life with. Because you ain't got a handle on the toxicity. I don't know if you know this guy, Anthony von Leeuwenhoek. Here he is. He is known as the father of microbiology. Until his groundbreaking work, it was assumed that water was clean because you could see through it. Until one day, he filled a vial with water, and he looked through a newly acquired microscopic lens, and he saw what he described rather quaintly as very many small animal quells. And he examined one drop, and he looked in great detail at the drop, and he logged the detail of what he saw. And he said, I saw little eels or worms lying all huddled up together, just as if you saw with the naked eye a whole tub full of eels squirming around upon one another. What looked so very clean, so presentable on the outside, was not clean at all. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to say to you at the start of the new year that God sees right through our hearts. He sees the jealousy, the resentment, the pride, the lust, the self-seeking, the arrogance, the greed. He sees the worshipping when we take his good gifts and we use them and worship them and use them for ourselves, and we forget him and we push him to the suburbs, and he sees all these things squirming out of our toxic hearts. And you see, that's why I cannot go forward on merit, because I've got to take responsibility for what I see within and see where it leaves me. And this centurion instinctively knows that, which leads me to our last point. We all have faith. Why do we need a faith that works? Try verse 2. His servant is dying. A wrong foundation of faith. He deserves to have you do it, merit. What's the right foundation for faith? Let's draw to a close now and finish as we look down and have a look at verses 6 to 8 as we look down, 6 to 8. So Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I don't deserve to have you come under my roof. This is why I do not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. That one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. What's going on here? What's the right foundation for faith? What have we got here? Well, can you see it in verse 6? Now hold on to your seats. Here's the verse for 2019. So Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to him to say to him, and can you see the basis, the object of the centurion's faith? Here it is. It's one word. Here's the 2019 word. Here it is, Lord. Lord. The centurion says, "I see who you are, Jesus. And I'm overwhelmed. I see who you are." That's what he says. "And I'm not trying to call in a debt because I see who you are. In fact, because of who you are, I've no claim on you whatsoever. I don't even deserve to have you come under my roof." Verse 7, "But you just need to say the word and he'll be healed. Because Jesus, I've heard and I've seen myself that you have authority over disease and death." So there was Jairus, who was a synagogue leader, and his daughter was raised from the dead. And out on the Sea of Galilee, Jesus said, "Quiet, be still," and a storm flattened. And there were many that were healed. There was a paralyzed man, and he got up and he took up his mat and walked because Jesus just said the word. And this centurion says, "I see who you are," and that is the basis of faith. That's the basis. That's the evidence. Who is Jesus and what he's done? That's the information rooted in history, here written down, that's at the heart of Christian faith. We have this information, we work out whether it's true, we act upon it, and that's what this centurion is doing. He's acting upon it. And do you see what happens? Well, you see, here's a man who actually has profound reasoning. Do you see his reasoning? He understands power. He understands authority. He's a very logical man. You would want him commanding you. Do you see what he says? "But say the word and my servant will be healed. Because I know who you are, Jesus. I've heard what you've done. I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. That one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." Now, centurions were the backbone of the Roman Empire. They were directly accountable to generals who were directly accountable to the emperor himself. There were only three levels. You had the emperor, you had the generals, you had the centurion. And the centurion said, "Look, I'm just a man, but because I have this relationship with the emperor, I have his power. So my soldiers would not dream of disobeying me because when I order them, it's the emperor. Because it's a straight line of command. And Jesus, I see what you've done. You're God's son. So when it comes to death and disease, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm trusting you." And that's the question on faith. Will you trust Jesus? When it comes to your death, where are you going to go? That's what I faced when I was 16, with no one in the family that was Christian. Rico, where do you go with the death of your godfather? Who's got a solution? Disease, disorder, depression, divorce, will you trust him? Will you make him the object of your faith? And of course, it's not about whether I'm worthy or not. Jesus is about you. It's not about me trying to leverage you in my debt. How can I possibly do that when you made the stars? You're God of all things. I've offended you infinitely. I mean, if the heart is investigated as this glass of water could be investigated, it wouldn't be good. No, verse 6, I don't deserve to have you come under my roof. No, I don't deserve anything. But you can do anything. I don't deserve anything. But Jesus, you can do anything. And I believe you don't just have authority. You see, this is what's amazing about faith. You don't just have authority. Lord, you don't just have authority, you also have love. Amazingly, you've also got love. So you reach out to me when I'm your enemy, and my heart reveals that, how I've offended my Creator. But God demonstrates his love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So you've got authority and you've got love. Now, 2019, who do you want to trust? I mean, 2019, where are you going to put your hand? Who are you trusting? He's got authority. He raises the dead. He rises from the dead. He's got love. Will you come to him? Who are you going to trust? So, four things from this passage to consider for 2019. We all have faith. Why do I need a faith that works? Well, look at verse 2. A wrong foundation for faith. I deserve it. It's what I've done. A right foundation for faith. Lord, you have love. I'm going to trust you. These are some huge points. We're heading into the new year. I'm just going to leave you now for a minute just to meditate in the silence, just to ponder them. What do you need to hear? But also, what do your loved ones, your friends, your colleagues need to hear? How do we need to pray for them as well? So let's just be silent. Let's pray. Let's keep the passage open. Let's ponder what struck us.